access to banking, making payments and saving, so more fees are taken. And every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every week at Saturday, 12.05 p.m. to 1.30 p.m. It's your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and blockchain news, talk, and more. Well, what happened this week? After months of figuratively watching paint dry, Bitcoin prices dive 10% in an hour. And Bitcoin Cash hard forks, we talked about that last week. Well, who won? And who launched the spam attack on Bitcoin Cash, ABC, as opposed to Bitcoin Cash, SV, or now just BCH, or whatever the your exchange of choice is calling these things. Plus, the CEO of Apley Health, Dr. Jerry Beinauer, joins us to tell us how his Tampa Bay startup is bringing blockchain to healthcare. Well, we've got a mixed bag in more ways than once, not to... Maybe bag wasn't the right term. We've got a mixed crew here. So everyone you'll recognize, but a little mix up. Hopefully you listen to the Talking Markets show with Mark and Andy. Andy, a.k.a. Goldbug1. He's gotten called away on important business, but we still have a crew here for you. Blockchain. It's our Mr. Blockchain. This is our blockchain developer. It's Stephen Lubka. Thank you for joining us, Stephen.
Great to be here. Happy to be here.
I don't know what I was just looking at right then, but it was an unfamiliar face on a familiar phrase.
So you say that only proves that I did.
Any regulars know who that's going to be. That's Augie. Hi, Augie.
Hey, Henry. It's a crazy time, and what's going on with this these latest moves?
Oh, I hope you'll be able to explain it all to us here today. No. Maybe, maybe not. Anyway, it hopefully people listened last week when we really got into the personalities of the Bitcoin Cash fork, hard fork that was coming this week. And little did we know the disruption it would cause in the marketplace. We're going to talk about all that in just a moment. But we, if you go back to the podcast site and listen to some of that exchange with Roger Ver, or where he was talking about the, I guess you call it the breakup email with Dr. Craig Wright and what happened there, you'll get a sense. And we talked about some of the things that were... With John Sacco, he explained some of the issues with Bitcoin Cash and why there was going to be a hard fork. Hopefully, Stephen will be able to help us review that this week. But that sort of set it up. But the ramifications were really beyond a lot of what we expected.
I've got news for you.
Well, Bitcoin's moment of relative stability ended abruptly Wednesday, and that would have been the 14th, and we were looking at the hard fork coming on the 15th, just to put you in chronological order there. The world's largest cryptocurrency hit its lowest level of the year, falling as much as 9% to the low of 5,390. I think depending on what exchange you're looking at, it might have even gone lower than that. Bitcoin had been trading comfortably around the 6,400 range for the majority of the fall. Actually, going back even into the summer, it was still pretty much trading up and down in that range. Other cryptocurrencies fared worse on Wednesday. Ether fell as much as 13%, Ripple 15%, some even more than that, some many more than that. The rout is likely being spurred by uncertainty around Bitcoin Cash, according to founder and CEO of BKCM, Brian Kelly. You see him on CNBC, and we play his audio sometimes. The cryptocurrency was down 18% ahead of a hard fork. Now, remember, the fork had nothing to do with Bitcoin itself. The two digital currencies split Bitcoin Cash into Bitcoin ABC and Bitcoin SV for Satoshi Vision. Of course, Bitcoin Cash, almost a year ago to the day, was the result of a fork off of Bitcoin. The entire cryptocurrency market capitalization dropped $15 billion over 24 hours on Wednesday. Actually, it was more like an hour. The total market cap was around $185 billion, and Bitcoin itself, I believe, is down under the $100 billion mark for the first time in about a year. From a technical analysis standpoint, as Bitcoin falls below 6,000, it's possible that the stop loss orders are automatically going to effect. Well, you think so? That's according to senior market analyst Maddie Greenspan at eToro. And, of course, there's also the possibility that people were margined out on that and they were going to be called on their margins at the exchange they hold. I've got a brief audio as CNBC tried to cover this that we'll listen to, and then we'll get the crew's opinions on this.
There's been a bounce too, Dom.
There has been a bounce. At one point, Bitcoin was down worse than it was right now, and all of those alternative coins, those smaller ones, were down by much more. But take a look at the reason why it's important is Bitcoin, obviously the largest and most, at least high profile of those cryptocurrencies. For the longest time, about a couple of months now, you can see here in this little square, Bitcoin prices have
So as he's diagramming the chart, he's showing that long horizontal pattern that many anybody watching would have seen. And it's more than a couple months, as he said. It really is since August and really started to narrow its volatility down. The volatility, in fact, up until this week, had been lower than the S&P 500 over the last couple months. Let's hear what else he has.
Relatively nothing. Even today, with the move lower here, they are still relatively stable, although this is the biggest move lower that we've seen in quite some time. So it put a little bit of fear back into the marketplace for some of those people who have been long some of these cryptocurrencies. Now, the reason why it's important is because it's not the worst performer. The reason why these cryptocurrencies in general are lower on the day is because there is something called it's a hard fork. It's a software change that's going to affect Bitcoin Cash in particular. And Bitcoin Cash is going to go through this process that could, by some theories, debase the value of that particular alternative coin. And for that reason, some of these coins are now down even worse than what Bitcoin is. Although I would point out that for some of these, they were down by 15, 16, 17, even 19% going into this. So something to watch there, guys, as we watch this crypto stick.
All right. So let me go to Stephen here. We have the fork coming up. Can you tell the audience what the issue was, why there was a need, well, let's not say a need, a desire to fork Bitcoin Cash?
So the fork is largely a political thing. You have two prominent figures in the Bitcoin Cash community. You have Roger Ver, and, you know, in this debate, there's kind of Roger Ver and the larger camp around there or that he's a part of. You can also say there's, you know, Jihan Wu, the CEO of Bitmain, and, you know, maybe it's not Roger Ver's camp. It's just a, you know,
name, let me just point out to the audience then. So Bitmain, the big Bitcoin miner, is also a heavy backer of Bitcoin Cash and now Bitcoin Cash ABC.
Yes.
That they're putting all their mining rigs into that.
And so we're going to refer to that as the kind of, that's the original Bitcoin Cash chain. Bitcoin Cash Core ABC. But then you have another camp, which is now behind the Bitcoin Cash SV, which stands for Satoshi's Vision. And this is the nearest thing to a religious fundamentalism that we're going to see in cryptocurrency.
Why is that?
Because it's essentially an appeal. You have this figure who claims to be Satoshi Nakamoto. This is Dr. Wright, Dr. Craig Wright, but has never actually proved that. A lot of people, including myself.
Self-anointed.
He's a self-anointed Satoshi who is now essentially making a call to the
true believers.
To true believers, he's saying that this is Satoshi's vision. Which is really, if you believe him, he's saying this is my own vision, which is strange. But he is just capitalizing on that to say, let's go with this chain. Even though, on a technical level, what they've done with that chain, I think, has little to do with the original Bitcoin white paper. They have increased the block size to 128 megabytes,
The original Bitcoin Cash fork was about increasing the block.
Yes, and now
what was that increase?
To 8. So
from
it's
two
from
to eight.
One to eight. Well, two if you count SegWit, but
okay.
One or two to eight.
Megabit.
So a reasonable, you know, that's a technical difference. We can respect that. We can say, okay, there are some merits to increasing the block size. There are merits to not doing so. And so, obviously, we can have different opinions. And, you know, that's a valid experiment, not to support everything that went on with that.
And
but
ABC is the 128.
Yes.
Sounds like a Michael Jackson song.
ABC?
Yes. But SV is 128. That is the new block size.
So how many is ABC?
Eight still. Oh. Or perhaps they've gone to 32.
Okay.
So they've now increased again to 32. Now, the thing that you need to know with increasing the block size is that increasing the block size increases the number of transactions that you can include in a block.
Let me ask you, can you define a block?
A block is essentially an update to the ledger that is Bitcoin or another cryptocurrency. So every 10 minutes, at least on the Bitcoin network, it's every 10 minutes, a new block is published. So say I've moved money from A to B. The ledger has to update to reflect that change in balance. Say I've lost 10, the other account has gained 10. And so a block essentially updates those balances.
Is that status change?
Yeah, you could say it's a status change of the ledger, and it occurs every 10 minutes. It's the transactions are processed, and without this block, no money can be sent because money requires that status change, that update.
So we go back to the very original block, wherever that was 10 years ago, and every time there's a block, a.k.a. an update, a.k.a. a status change, another block. That's why it's a chain, block
exactly.
After block after block. And about a year ago, the Bitcoin Cash forked off. So if you pictured this 10-year-long
yes.
row of blocks. You can actually think of blocks if you want, rectangles or
yeah.
whatever. And then an offshoot goes off, and now for another year, the Bitcoin blocks keep going their direction, and the Bitcoin Cash blocks start to go off on this branch for a year, and now they've split again.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that, okay. Henry, I saw your hands going horizontally and vertically. Which is it? They're going in that direction.
Think of it like a root system, the way that roots
like branches
roots branch
split.
And split. And so it started with just one, and now over time we've seen it split, and we've seen the split. But so
can anything get in the way of it, cardiovascularly, so to speak, clog it and block it, block the blockchain?
Well, so there's
actually, we got a story coming up on that. So
yeah.
Finish your thought, and we'll get to Augie's thought.
So, and just to reiterate that, so they have increased the block size, and when you increase the block, that's the updates, that's processing transactions. So there's some benefits, there's some drawbacks to saying, should we have a larger block size? But increasing it to 128 megabytes per block, that is 128 times the size of the original and still current Bitcoin block size, there's some technical additions that technically increase the block size, but the original block is still one. So it's 128 times higher. And what that means is that a node, so the Bitcoin network, the Bitcoin Cash network, they rely on nodes to receive and relay transactions. However, the larger the block size, the more powerful of a computer you need to run a node. Here's the thing. Nodes don't get paid. Miners get paid. Nodes are not miners. And so people are running nodes for the benefit, almost out of goodwill, for the network. And these nodes are very crucial. And decentralization, meaning that there are a lot of different nodes controlled by different people, is also very important. When you increase the block size period, especially to such a large extent, you increase the cost of running a node. So, for example,
the greater the power, the greater the cost.
Exactly. The greater the block size, the greater the, you know, the computation resources required to run a node. So if we just say that, so to put it quite simply, a Bitcoin Cash SV block requires a computer with 128 times the capacity of a Bitcoin block.
Wow.
And so, you know, how many people are going to, and especially for, you know, a fork of a fork, how many people are going to want to pony up the resources and the electricity and, you know, the capacity, the server space to do that for essentially no reward?
So So the function itself is threatened.
Yeah, I think it is an absurd move by an absurd party. But it is. I think there's reason to argue for a moderate increase in block size and Bitcoin over its final, you know, in the attempt to really.
Is that a willful connivance?
Yeah, I mean, I think this has nothing to do with what's technically sound. That's why to go back to my original statement, this is a politically motivated decision between different parties in the Bitcoin Cash mm-hmm. camp.
Before we get too far down the chain, let me go back to something Augie asked you about a cardiovascular analogy, a congestion, a clogging. That's why the original Bitcoin Cash was put forward, because they said the Bitcoin chain, the original Bitcoin, was not going to be able to scale and handle more transactions, or it was clogged up.
Yes.
And then, so that... Is that also nominally the reason that they said they needed to improve Bitcoin Cash?
Well, see, they claim this. They claim a need to increase the block size and to continuously increase the block size, and yet Bitcoin Cash has no congestion. But it's also because very few people are really using the network. If you don't have a lot of users, it's hard to get a traffic jam. Whereas Bitcoin had a tremendous amount of users, did experience traffic jams, congestion of the network at very high, you know, like in December and January, where everyone in the world was getting Bitcoin for the first time. It got congested, and the fees got extremely high. And that's an issue, but there's multiple ways to solve that.
It has been resolved effectively for the most part.
There's definitely been some. There were two core improvements that were made, two things that happened that really improved that. One was the adoption implementation of SegWit, which is a scaling proposal on the Bitcoin network that essentially allows more data to be fit into the same sized block. So when I say, okay, it's 1 megabyte, well, it's kind of two. It's because SegWit doubled the amount that could be fit into the 1 megabyte block.
Okay.
So it's still one, but it acts like a two.
So is that an accommodation to the small investor, or what is that about? Sounds to me like the accommodation has not gone in that direction.
Tell me a little bit more about what you mean.
It's just an improvement in efficiency, because I want to we've got a couple things to get to before.
Sure.
We do have a guest coming on at 12:45, so I've got to keep us on time.
Yeah, and essentially there was also the batching of transactions. So exchanges... Prior to essentially some reporters shining a spotlight on what they were doing, exchanges, including Coinbase and other notable exchanges, were using the resources of the Bitcoin network in an extremely inefficient way. There's something called batching transactions, where you can include a lot more transactions into the same amount of space, and they weren't doing this. So after SegWit, after the exchanges adopted batching, the congestion on the Bitcoin network, cleared up a lot. And one last thing. So what you see here is that increasing the block size is one way to get additional transaction capacity, but there are also alternative technical solutions that don't require a Bitcoin block size increase. And those are kind of the two, that's the debate that's going on.
Right. So I wanted you to close out that thought, at least for the moment, because there was, we said it didn't seem to have any clogging, didn't have any congestion, but shortly after the Bitcoin fork, something unusual happened. Immediately after the Bitcoin Cash hard fork, the blocks on the Bitcoin ABC chain started filling up with nonsensically small transactions. At the time of the writing, shortly after the fork, three such blocks had been mined with a total of more than 50,000 transactions worth less than 0.5 Bitcoin Cash total. So it would save $200, just for a round number. 50,000 transactions totaling up to $200. Now, who would be doing that legitimately? As seen in the video below, well, we're not going to be able to show you that. The attack was going on around lunchtime, Chicago time, on November 15th. The method of attack seemed to be repeatedly sending transactions between the same addresses. This address, for instance, received 500 of the earliest transaction, then appeared to send 500 transactions to itself. So I think we would, those of us of suspicious minds, would think that the rival group was behind this.
Absolutely. I mean, this is an attack, and we have seen this.
Is that an attack, or is that a motivator to the investor out there who's naive that this is time to get in? Things are happening.
This is, in my opinion, this is an attack because we've seen this before.
Okay.
And in fact, when the Bitcoin Cash original fork happened, so when Bitcoin Cash split off from Bitcoin, the same thing was done to the Bitcoin network. A lot of the congestion that we saw actually was the result of these kind of organized, very, very low transaction, you know, just sending cents.
Deliberate.
Deliberate, yeah. And it, you know, it really congested the network. It made it hard to get a transaction through. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the obvious motivation here would be the other, you know, Bitcoin cash SV.
Would that push demand?
No. This is the sort of thing that can kind of only interfere with the network, because what it does is it makes it so if you want to actually send a legitimate transaction, it won't get through. So it'll make it more difficult to actually move money through the network.
On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the market effects to Bitcoin on all of this and what we speculate will be the future effects on a number of currencies. We also have news about NVIDIA and their crypto mining. We're going to talk about mining and the rival mining camps on this also. But let's go ahead and go to a break here, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. If you enjoy the trading and investment ideas you hear on Talking Markets with Mark and Andy, then you're going to want to become a member of their SeekingCryptos.com membership service. And you can join for absolutely free. When you sign up for a free membership at SeekingCryptos.com, you'll start receiving analysis and perspective by email on trade examples, cryptocurrencies, stocks, metals, educational content, and exclusive offers. SeekingCryptos.com has something for you advanced traders too. Check out the premium membership, the expert swing trades, or the quant geeks packages. Seeking Cryptos have skin in the game just like you. They post their trades in real time, and you can follow the results right on their portfolio page. So what are you waiting for? Go to SeekingCryptos.com and sign up for your free membership now. If you're a business owner, you need to start listening right now to find out how a few feet of empty floor space can turn into a steady stream of both money and new faces into your business. Hosting a Bite Federal Bitcoin ATM gives you a leg up on your competition by giving your location a destination-oriented visitor that will come back time and time again. Frequent Bitcoin ATM customers become frequent shoppers in your storefront. To find out more, just call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E, or 877-855-2983, and you'll be talking to the same local business experts you've heard on the Henry Rain Show. Or just go to BikeFederal.com and fill out the simple form to begin hosting a Bitcoin ATM in your business. Don't wait. Start earning new revenue and seeing new customers right away. Call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E. That's 877-855-2983, or go to BikeFederal.com.
There's a new way to experience wellness. Hi, I'm Laura Alcover, owner and operator of Alcover Massage. We're the first business in Bradenton's Village of the Arts to accept cryptocurrency. Whether you use Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, or Litecoin, you can now pay for quality massage therapy using cryptocurrency at Alcover Massage. So if you seek medical massage or a relaxing session with light pressure, your session will be conducted by a talented therapist. You'll be glad you booked with us. Check out and like our Facebook page where you can book online in seconds. And remember to tell your friends. Give us a call, 941-592-3187. That's 941-592-3187. Alcover Massage, quality massage therapy in your neighborhood. MA number 50525, MM number 34081.
Welcome to the blockchain. hey, this is Brian. I listen to it every week. I really like it. Me and my wife, we just stop our cars every Saturday at 12 o'clock. Make sure we listen to the show. It's great. I'm learning a lot about these cryptocurrencies. Keep on listening.
Henry Rain Show here at WWPR 1490 AM in the studio. Blockchain developer Stephen Lufka. And, of course, our own Augie is here. And we're glad for all that. We were talking about the ramifications of the Bitcoin Cash hard fork that happened actually on the 15th. But Bitcoin, the original Bitcoins, price dropped about $1,000 in a matter of about an hour. About $800 in the first hour, and then just trailed down a little bit more after that. So, Stephen, did you happen to be watching Bitcoin prices when this was happening?
I saw it. It happened so quick, I probably missed the actual plunge, but I saw it shortly thereafter. I got some messages from people I know and work with. I really you hear the analysts and the voices have claimed that this drop is because of the Bitcoin Cash hard fork. But, you know, I think that I think people are so hasty to try to attribute a drop to something. And, I think saying that this was caused by a Bitcoin Cash hard fork is hard to imagine why a competitor to Bitcoin having a problem would cause Bitcoin to drop.
Because all the other movements in Bitcoin are so logical.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think if it's at anything related to the Bitcoin Cash hard fork, it's simply that some larger players decided to essentially bring the price down in the environment around that, and you know, it hits stop losses, it triggers a chain reaction, but it's not a fundamentally driven event that any problem with Bitcoin Cash should negatively reflect on the price of Bitcoin. There's no reason to suggest that.
Well, let's just look at it a little bit. All it takes, we now know from past shows and people studying it, that two-thirds of all the Bitcoin is getting traded over the counter. We're not seeing it on exchanges. We also know that some of the exchanges allow super high margins mm-hmm. and leveraging. Many investors go way out on a limb. You also have the ability to place stop losses on many of these. So if two-thirds of the Bitcoin is being traded over the counter where we can't see it, that means that it takes two-thirds less on the open market to move it.
Sure.
So it seems like it's even easier to manipulate now. So it would be, wouldn't be hard for someone to take advantage of this. We saw this about a
yes.
month and a half ago when, Bitfinex or BitMEX went down for...
Yes. BitMEX, yeah.
Yeah, went down, and someone... pumped the price of Bitcoin
yeah.
up, so some people. So what do you see in the short term? We have the New York Stock Exchange rolling out their backed Bitcoin product here before the end of the year. Are we going to, is this an accumulation, a lucky accumulation, just a coincidental accumulation opportunity for these people?
You know, it's hard to say what and when the future might hold for Bitcoin. There's definitely a large number of very important and fundamental drivers and infrastructure improvements coming in. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about here.
Example.
I mean, as you just said, backed, and as well as just institutional engagement and technical improvements.
JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs.
Sure, all those guys.
Bank of America, Fidelity, all have products coming out in early 2019.
And on a technical front, we have Lightning Network, which is...
With all of that sudden competition, what is your prediction, if you will?
I don't have one here because I think it could go either way. I mean, we could see a rally from the deployment and money entering the market through these trading tools. That's definitely possible. But we could also see it not respond. And we could also see the market stay depressed until there is a more fundamental catalyst that really
right.
gets people excited.
Well, technical charting analysts have been saying that if it were to break the 5,800 level, which it has now, the next stop would be 4,500. But then you're starting to look at multi-year
trends. And I would say that if people were trying to manipulate in anticipation of the big expansion of potential markets, you would see that lower low before we get to the rapid, the widespread adoption, starting with the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, how much before? We're within months of the...
Yes, but you know things happen in an hour in Bitcoin time.
So that's no time at all.
Well, it what I'm saying is that if there were big holders of Bitcoin and they intended to dump the price down to 4,500, it could be done. That's what some people have said was the next level. Andy on our show has said that that would be the next level. On the other hand, I think once we get into the widespread institutional adoption, when those kind of powers, when you start to affect their wealth, some even without regulation, there's ramifications. Before we go into one other story about regulation, we have our guest coming up in about 6 or 7 minutes. What about the ramifications for Bitcoin Cash? Because we had two parties, Roger Ver, Craig Wright, but not to personalize it. We also had big financial interests of Bitmain Mining in China. CoinGeek is a mining pool. It pretends to be a journalism, but they are very partisan in their journalism for their self-interest. These mining pools and their hashing power. So we had multiple people that were banking on this as being to their personal benefit. But it was to no one's benefit. If Bitcoin Cash split off a year ago because they were going to be better than Bitcoin as far as a functioning currency, they've pulled the rug out of themselves here.
That narrative hasn't been the case, and we have not seen. You know, that's a story, and there was a lot going on. There was I was very actively involved in trading the markets during the days of the Bitcoin Cash hard fork, and I remember the narratives that were being told. And Bitcoin Cash never really became, you know, a widespread functional use currency. I mean, it's just not what happened. And now we're seeing it split again. And you know, it's the political narrative and the draw to the Bitcoin Cash camp. It was always an anti-Bitcoin movement. I mean, it very much was a pushback against the Bitcoin core developers, against Blockstream, and against the way that Bitcoin development was going. And I mean, I think it found itself difficult to maintain kind of its own identity in a meaningful way, and so it's now splitting apart.
So I think we can probably say, with as certainty as anything we can say in this space, that Bitcoin Cash is not going to be the transactional cryptocurrency of the world.
There's no sign that lets me say that.
It's actually enhanced Bitcoin as not only being a store of value, but being a transfer of value. Maybe not for your cup of coffee at Starbucks, although they say that's coming.
Yeah.
Through the New York Stock Exchange and BACT and all these things are trying to make it more accessible.
And Lightning Network and so
right.
A couple
and
different
I saw there's like 100,000 channels set up for Lightning Network off the chain, if you will, of Bitcoin. So, and then from an alternative coin to transact, it seems like Litecoin has been less drama and more efficiency in that, and you know maybe Stellar, maybe Ripple, all of these. But I think it's unless we see Bitcoin Cash rise like a phoenix, it doesn't seem to be going very well. We talked about the institutional investors that are coming into the cryptocurrency space, but what about the ICOs? We have all these coins that were introduced in ICOs, thousands of them. This certainly didn't help their future as it was already pretty bleak. And then we had this story this week. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, has compelled two crypto startups to register their token sales as security offerings. It's the first time the SEC has pursued such an action without additional charges of fraud. So they've already gone after companies for fraud. We had the story, I think, just last week about Ether Delta, where they were pursuing them. In a pair of orders published Friday morning, the SEC announced they had settled charges with Carrier EQ Incorporated, otherwise known as AirFox, and Paragon Coin Incorporated. Both startups would register their tokens as securities as part of the settlement, refund investors, which seems like a real tall order, pay penalties of $250,000, and file periodic statements with the regulator for at least the next year. I think the statements might be the easiest part. We aren't doing anything. We're done. You can just stick a fork in us. And like last week, I'm just speculating. I don't know, have any inside information of this. And last week's settlement with Zachary Coburn, founder of the decentralized exchange Ether Delta, seems to be a harbinger of things to come. Nick Hartner, a partner at Castle Island Ventures, focused on public blockchain startups, believes the regulator is building up a body of case law against unregistered security offerings and bad actors. It's really hard to say or predict the SEC is going to do, but from what I understand from their strategy, they're going after the slam dunks, the low-hanging fruit, the cases where it's clear that there's going to be a profit made with the token. Friday's order seems to support the theory, according to Stephen Pally, a lawyer with D.C.-based law firm Anderson Kill. Based on the way they are worded, Pally says the orders would appear to apply to 95% of all the token sales in the last 2 years, which should have a lot of startups shaking in their boots right now. In fact, the language is identical in a couple of spaces. The footnotes are identical. I would say it definitely looks like a template to me. So a lot of copy and paste going on at the SEC. But what do you think of that? We've got a couple minutes here, Stephen. Is this another move to normalize the blockchain cryptocurrency space?
Absolutely. And I really agree with the comments that Nick Carter made. This does seem like the SEC, it is building a body. It's building a case history, so something to look back on, something that, in both, legal courts and the companies can look at. And it also is going after. These are two offerings that occurred after. So these token sales were conducted after the SEC had already stated certain warnings, and so these were the easy ones to go after, and this is very significant for the space. Now, while I believe the ICO space absolutely needs regulation because it has been one of the most fraught with fraud, I'm also a big fan of the ICO fundraising technique, and I think there's something really of value there. And I think it democratizes early stage funding. It offers it to more investors and to a more global audience, and just presents less barriers to fundraising. Now, it of course has been taken advantage of by a lot of parties. But I think this regulation is important. But I hope I hope ICOs are not strangled, because I think there really is some value there.
Well, what they've been moving to is either airdrops, just giving away their stuff, and hoping that people start to use it, which would be an interesting business model for Ford or Chevy. But the other thing that they've been doing is going to accredited investors.
Yes.
And offering, was it a Series B, Series 2 offering? I forget the term for it. Do you know which one it is?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Okay. I don't know. Have any idea.
All right. Well, anyway, you can do a
Series D, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of startups that are looking at that as an alternative to offering the ICO. But it sounds like if they're thinking that if the investors are thinking the token that comes with these, a simple agreement for future tokens, is going to increase in value, they're now going to have to start thinking about the SEC and this. This half of the show, we wrapped up on that. We're going into another half of the show here, where we're going to be speaking with Dr. Jerry Meinhauer. He's a physician and entrepreneur and the CEO of Apley Health in the Tampa Bay area. We're going to be talking to him in just 1 second. We'll just catch our breath there.
It's on the way out.